Beginning today, South Korea is hosting a three-day summit for democracy. The international gathering comes at a critical juncture as more than 60 countries have held or are scheduled to hold national elections this year. That includes the host, Seoul, and pioneered the summit, Washington, D.C. Why is the U.S.-led initiative especially important now to counter authoritarianism and democratic backsliding? For further insights, we're now joined by Professor Kim Byung-joo of the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies. Good morning, Professor Kim.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. So today is the first day of Summit for Democracy being held right here in Seoul. Maybe we can provide some background as to what exactly this is. How did it begin? We know it's pioneered by the Biden administration. What exactly is it?
Right, indeed. It was initiated by the Biden government of the United States. And the first one we had was held back in December 2021. At that time, it was pretty unique. Well, of course, it was at the end side of the curve of COVID-19 and stuff. But still, it was interesting that the summit was held in a virtual format. Mm-hmm. And the tradition continues. Even this third one we are having here in Korea is going to be a virtual summit. So interesting tradition initiated by the Biden government back in, as I said, December 2021. Three themes were put ahead for this summit when it was initiated. One was against anti-authoritarianism. So anti-authoritarian is the theme. Anti-corruption is the second theme. And then four, human rights, pro-human rights. So anti-authoritarian, anti-corruption, pro-human rights. Those are the three themes, actually, for this summit. After December 21st, the first summit held, second one was held last year, March 2023, again in virtual format. And that time, it was co-host format because it was a virtual summit. I guess that was possible. Uh-huh. Co-hosted by the United States, Costa Rica, Zambia, the Netherlands, and Korea. So five countries co-hosting the summit. It was what we saw March last year for the second summit. And this is the third one. And this is a single country host. Korea is the one. And as you reported, 3 days starting from today until Wednesday. And the theme this time is democracy for future generations. So kind of like more forward looking. And even though it's a virtual summit, as you reported in the news segment, Tony Blinken, U.S. State Secretary, is in Seoul to join as a special guest. Today will be more of a ministerial conference type, and tomorrow will be civil society and youth event. And then Wednesday will be leaders' plenary session. So that's the way it's organized and it has been run. When it was first organized back in 2021, Taiwan was included. So people noticed, experts noticed around the world, it has something to do with the U.S. alliance strategy under the Biden administration to take care of the countries on its side. And so different talks were aired. There was some criticism when the first summit was held because at that time the Philippines was ruled by President Duterte and the Philippines was invited. And some of the critics of Philippines were saying, is Philippines really a country of democracy or not? And then other critics at that time was raising question about including Brazil, Indonesia, and Nigeria and so on in this conference. But I guess different people can say different things. So the controversy we noticed at that time, and this time, I don't think we hear as much of conference controversy as we heard during the first gathering, I guess.
Okay. So maybe that might be a change. One of the bigger differences between the first Summit for Democracy in December 2021 and the one being hosted in Seoul now. As you've pointed out, it's a virtual format, which is inherently unique. But perhaps appropriate considering that many pundits, especially political pundits, have been concerned that technology could potentially doom democracy. Could it be a threat to mega election years and so on forth? And another important question we want to raise is, in this day and age of rising populism and authoritarianism, why should we focus especially on democracy and its values?
That's an important question, because a lot of people actually raise that question. Does democracy matter anymore? And there are a lot of books introduced by scholars, both warning the ultimate demise of the democracy or possibility of democracy going down the drain.
Professor Kim, about 10 years ago, I bought an airport book, said democracy is doomed.
Yeah. 10 years ago, let's say there was a 2011. I guess that's one of the early prophets, but the situation has become much more serious, I guess. 10 years ago, only a small number of people were talking about it, but this time, increasing number of people are talking about it. And we just, had the reports about Russia's presidential election.
Right.
And its governments, in democracy, in the forms, but in substance, in real practice, deviating from that. It's a real debate these days. But going back to your question about why democracy matters and why democracy is kind of talked about in this kind of format, in a global summit format and so on. Of course, there is a United States foreign policy objective, but setting that aside, just focusing on the idea of democracy itself, actually, we have to recognize that there's a long tradition in the philosophy of liberalism. Many philosophers made an argument, including, I'm talking about all the way back to, this sounds so archaic or classical, but Jeremy Bentham and Immanuel Kant. These were thinkers at the end of 18th century. You're laughing,
please tie the two ends together.
Yes, because they both wrote an article and books that includes the phrase perpetual peace back in 1794-95, almost simultaneously. Bentham and Kant, they wrote this book and article with perpetual peace. What do they mean? They said, if countries are all democratic, there will be no war. And it's a controversial proposition, but the thing is, serious scholars over the past several decades, in recent decades especially, have tested this theory. Is it true that actually war between democracies do not occur, rarely occurs? And they found that that actually is true. It's very difficult to find cases where democracies fighting against one another. It's usually authoritarian, aggressor that takes an action, and then democracy is responding. That's the historical fact. Yeah. And so indeed, scholars in the study of international relations actually argue that Bentham and Kant were right in arguing for perpetual peace sustained by democracy. So in a way, going all the way back to the end of 18th century, if we strengthen democracy, if we spread democracy, there will be peace in the world. That cause itself has been sustained, to say the least.
Then can I ask, Professor Kim, what is the significance of Korea hosting this gathering as technically the first host that's, not Washington, not within Washington, D.C.'s parameters?
Yeah, I guess some people in Korea may recognize this, but I understand not many of them here thinking Korea has set a good example for political development for the world. Huh. Everybody knows Korea has a good example, that has been set for economic development. Mm. But political side, because what we are hearing in the headlines and everything, we often forget that what Korea has done for the world is setting up examples, two pillars together, economic development and political development. And to say some of the obvious things, last Friday was the anniversary for the Masan uprising that took place back in 1960, that led to the April 19th revolution that ended Lee Sung-man government. So first dictator was pushed out by the Korean people, and then Park Chung-hee government, his regime ended back in 79 as a result of Puma uprising, Busan and Masan uprising in October 79. And then we also remember 87, June 87, the fight for democracy that ended Chun Doan's plan for extending military regime. And as recently as back in 2017, it was not a dictatorship government, but a Park Geun-hye government that did not meet the expectation of the people was pushed out by People's Uprising. So basically, Korea has a set an example. Democracy is basically ruled by the people, and people power and, you know, popular sovereignty. People owning the system, people running the system, people asking the leaders to deliver what they want. Korea has set a very strong example of how country should be run, actually, by the will of the people. And there have been many, many examples of Korean people fighting for democracy and achieving it again and again.
I want to take our listeners maybe beyond the major points you just mentioned of modern history in Korea. What is it that Korea has done setting examples for building a system of democracy? I remember one of our experts also chiming in saying, even the heated political debates that are happening as we speak in an important election here in Seoul, the pendulum swinging left and right is not such a bad thing. It is the people, the public demanding more and more out of a government. And that could be, dare I say, a healthy sign of democracy.
Yeah, exactly. As we discussed before, right? In Northeast Asia and East Asia, it's rare to see an example. Maybe Taiwan may be following Korea's example, but not many countries around the world, especially in this East Asia, change of government regularly taking place. For a while, Korea saw after democratization, every 10 years, government was handed to the other side of political spectrum, one after another. And that's all by the control of the people. And so that's an example that you cannot deny. But not only people's action, but people's uprising, achieving democracy, but also the way Korea has achieved setting up the institutions of democracy is also important under, you know, under these democratically elected government one by one. For instance, Kim Il-sung government ended the power or dominance of a military group that lasted for about 3 decades. You know, Hanawhae, ending of Hanawhae alliance in the military was a major step by Kim Il-sung government. And then Kim Il-sung government also introduced the real name system for finance. That kind of plays a very important cornerstone in terms of ending money's influence over politics. Efforts continued after that, but it was a very important first step. And then the governments that followed, for instance, they introduced the system of public officials having to disclose their assets to the people and prohibiting government officials taking any gifts or, you know, bribes from the people. The system itself is kind of example setting for the world. And, you know, NGOs, civic groups actually intervening the party nomination of the candidates. It was about 20 years ago, we saw Nakcheon Nakseon Undong, for instance, civic groups coming in to pointing out, you know, which candidates should not run for their seats. And so it was a real example of bottom-up democracy coming into the system. And also, political money reform 2004 that set up a unprecedented system of publicly managing money in politics. That's a system that not many other countries have kind of matched. And Korea has set up all these different examples of you know, building systems of democracy over the years. And so I think we need more efforts in terms of understanding what has Korea achieved, not only through its struggle and fight for democracy and driving out the dictators one by one, but also quietly building the foundation and system of democracy and cornerstones of democracy over the years. I think we need to further highlight those efforts. That works actually go to people like me, you know, scholars who study politics, you know, discovering and presenting to the public in a form that's easier to understand in terms of how much Korea has achieved, even though we know every day in Korean media there are all these headlines about how much has gone wrong in Korean politics. In order to fix the problems now, we have to understand how much you have come so far. We need better balance between the achievement on one hand and then failures on the other, so that we can actually rectify these failures further.
Professor Kim, I like how you take punches at the nature of media almost weekly, and I feel the need to defend, but that's fair. I think we have to sometimes adjust our perspective. How are headlines formed, and what do they exist for? And should we always take a deeper dive to understand a bigger context? It's not just about the daily headlines after all.
Exactly.
Here's the big question perhaps we all ought to be asking. To what extent can we say that such a legacy in Korea offers confidence for a democracy in the long term, or should we look at the inverse and say that despite what we have achieved so far, Korea's democracy may still face a decline, just like other leading democracies of the world have experienced?
We have seen countries like the UK and the United States, and particularly the United States, succeeding in establishing a wonderful system of democracy that becomes an example for the world, but still take the course downhill, basically, declining the system. What I remember is ever since 1980s, United States emphasizing smaller government and the market, a minimum government and maximum market, and highlighting economy and then downplaying politics. What they ended up was these free competition principles and so on resulted in incredible polarization of the system, people being left behind while the elites accumulate unbelievable amount of wealth and prosperity on the opposite side. And this polarization basically literally means system falling apart. And we have seen these kind of cases. That's why we are concerned. And looking at that, what we have to keep in mind is Korea also, as we discussed, has built all this wonderful system of democracy over the years without people realizing as clearly. But now what we have to do is keeping in mind these examples of other countries, negative examples of other countries, and try to avoid what they have done. And so what we should keep in mind is what these countries have failed is in holding together the national community. The holding together the national community is the most important function of politics. Economics is much about individual players trying to maximize their profit, doing things on their own, and then coming together in harmony through the market system. But politics is about common goods, you guys have been making a lot of money now. Let's say, let's think about certain redistribution so that we will make sure that nobody is falling behind. Because if people fall behind, they will get upset and they will rise up and they will do things like electing populist presidents. Yeah. And that's what we want to avoid. So we want to make sure that we go together, everybody together as a community. That's the system of politics. And Korea has certain examples of achieving those kind of efforts as well during the early years of a new millennium, for instance. So if we continue to kind of pay attention to the facts about what we have achieved over the past several decades and keep our eyes on in terms of making sure that we sort of give in and give up some of our profit maximization desires for the sake of the common goods and for the rest of the people in the community. That way, I think we can hold together this community and then go forward continuously, unlike other examples that we've seen elsewhere around the world.
How appropriate is it that Summit for Democracy is being hosted here in an important election year for South Korea? But not only that, I mean, you take inventory of some of the more important elections across the world. We're looking at 60 to 70 countries hosting their own elections. And we can't argue that election is the fundamental pillar of democracy, something to keep tabs on. Professor Kim, we need an entire hour, don't we?
Yes, actually, right. More than an hour, several hours.
But we appreciate you highlighting some of the most important points. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you very much.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.